Hey, you're the one looking up stuff on ChatGPT over there.
I asked very specifically what questions to ask Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com on a Cleveland Sports Talk radio show.
I think we have an idea of it right now, and he joins us on the fan hotline from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. Also has ebooks out right now that you can find on Amazon, Father of Mine and Son of Mine. You know, he's an author and a writer. And I believe you are now, wait a minute, did you pass the bar, Mike? I'm sorry, are you a lawyer?
Yeah, I practiced for 18 years. I passed the bar twice, once in Pennsylvania and once in West Virginia.
I'll be dipped. Okay, I thought so, but I'm like, because there's a lot of guys who used to be like lawyers.
Congratulations on all your success.
And then they're writers, and I'm like, well, okay, which ones are which? So
that was not one of the ChatGPT questions that Ken just asked.
With what's going on with Quinshon Judkins here, I mean, let's go from a legal standpoint first. What's facing this Browns running back? And then we'll go to an NFL standpoint if we can.
Well, misdemeanor, domestic battery. The police report was released yesterday. Closed fist punch to the mouth chin area of a former, or maybe more on again, off again, girlfriend. She waited a few days to decide to make the report, which is understandable under the circumstances. Look, I don't know what's true and what's not true, but it would be understandable that somebody wouldn't want to immediately call 911 and derail someone's career. Maybe she wanted to try to work through it. Maybe it just took her time. She told the police. She talked to friends and family about it, decided to make the report. She still had visible bruising. She had pictures from the day after the incident where the bruising was even more evident, according to the police report. So that's what he faces under Florida law, misdemeanor, domestic battery. But the separate issue is what the NFL will do about it. And one thing we've learned over the past 11 years, all the way back to the Ray Rice case, the NFL does not look kindly on allegations of players engaged in any form or fashion of domestic violence.
Well, Mike, we clearly know that optics are a big deal in the NFL. It stinks that we have to talk about this, the gravity of things like domestic violence, but then try to fashion it into a sports talk discussion about how many games maybe a player is suspended or whether it's the commissioner's exemplus. With that said, you know, I saw the headline on the New York Post this morning about this case and the grisly details involved in the police report. And that's when the NFL tends to really react to these things, no?
It's all a PR tool. And for most employers, and I'm not saying whether this is right or wrong, let's just put this in the proper context. For most employers in the United States of America, anything you do away from work does not matter to your employment relationship, as long as you can show up for work. And when I used to practice law, I would advise companies from time to time on the things that were okay and not okay to consider when deciding whether or not to keep someone. And for the NFL, that's gone out the window because there's collective bargaining, and the union and the league have agreed that for certain things, the personal conduct policy comes into play, even if it is completely unrelated to anything the player ever does at work. He's still going to be held responsible. Think about it. He's not working off season. He's not even signed to a contract yet. He's subject to this policy. That's the way the NFL does it. And it's all a product of PR because of the outcry from the fans, from the customers. If you have guys who are doing things they shouldn't be doing and the NFL imposes no punishment upon them, that's where it all comes from. It's all PR driven. It's case by case. But one thing we've seen, when domestic violence is involved, the NFL is far more likely to take action and maybe swift action, including putting him on paid leave right after he signs his contract.
So regardless of the legal outcome of this, because, you know, last year this went on with Mike Hall, who was another second-round draft pick of the Browns. Legally, there wasn't very much of it, but he was still suspended for a time, and it basically, with the injury at the end of the season, became a lost season. Am I to assume as much with Quinshon Judkins here with this Browns football team?
Well, here's the timeline with Mike Hall. The incident happened on August 12. He was arrested on August 13. By the 26th, he was placed on paid leave. And when you're placed on paid leave, you stay on paid leave until the case is resolved and until the subsequent NFL personal conduct policy case is resolved. So that creates a very real incentive for the player to resolve the criminal case ASAP, and then pivot around and take whatever punishment the NFL proposes and get back on the field. And that's what happened with Hall. He pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct. He ended up being suspended, I think, 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And he got credit for the 4 that he missed while he was on paid leave. So there is strategically a reason to get this done the moment you're put on paid leave. Because if you just let the legal system play out while you're on paid leave, you may miss the whole season. Because unless you have an incentive to try to get your case wrapped up, and being on paid leave gives you that incentive, yeah, this thing could just linger and linger and linger. So that's how it could go for Judkins. We don't know what the NFL is going to do. They'll do their own investigation. They'll make a decision on whether or not they're going to put him on paid leave. They won't necessarily even announce that they're not doing it. But if they do it, he'll be gone, and he'll be back once that case is resolved. And presumably once he works out some sort of a deal with the NFL on whatever his punishment will be under the personal conduct policy.
Boy, you said something interesting there about the incentive structure that could be there for the player in these situations to plead, to get something over with sooner. Do prosecutors tend to use that as leverage when they have high-profile cases such as this?
Prosecutors use anything that they have. And if there's a way to get Quinshon Judkins to plead guilty to something and wrap up the case and move on, and they know he's going to receive a punishment within the confines of his employment. Yeah, that becomes part of what is negotiated. Now, again, Mike Hall pleaded guilty at the end of the day to disorderly conduct, and he allegedly put a gun to his girlfriend / fiance's head. So, you know, you may get some cooperation if you're willing to face the music and get this done quickly. But I think the prosecutors, if you're going to be fair, you recognize this guy's going to have a hell of a lot greater consequence within the confines of his employment than he's going to have as a first-time offender under the legal system.
Mike Florio joining us from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. What happens with the contract negotiation now? He's one of many, many, many second-rounders who haven't signed yet. They wanted guaranteed money, and now this is a major wrench thrown in here, is it not?
Yeah, and here's the broader look at what's going on in round 2. You've never had fully guaranteed contracts in the second round of the draft. This year, the Texans stepped out of line and gave Jaden Higgins a fully guaranteed contract at the second pick in round 2. That bracketed the Browns and forced them to do a fully guaranteed contract with Carson Schwechinger, the first pick in round 2. Everyone after that, and the next guy up is Nick Emenwari of the Seahawks, then Judkins, the fourth pick in round 2. It isn't just all of them trying to get fully guaranteed contracts. There's a percentage that each guy gets fully guaranteed, and when you jack the top 2 all the way up to 100, the rest of them are going to see an increase. And you really don't know what the right increase is until the guys in front of you do their deals. There's a thought around the league that Judkins is going to be the one to take less than 100 because of this arrest. And that's going to set the ceiling for the 5th guy in round 2, which sets the ceiling for the 6th guy in round 2. And they're just going to fall like dominoes all the way down to the bottom of the round. By the bottom of the round, last year it was like 52% of the deal was fully guaranteed. So again, these guys aren't going to get 100% guarantee. It's just the fact that the top 2 got 100%. It screws up everything else. But there's a belief that Judkins is going to be the one to get the deal done because of what happened. And then the agents will just blame it on Judkins as they cave at lower and lower percentages as we get deeper and deeper into the round.
Mike Florio, you've done terrific work along with Pablo Torre on the collusion case that is now starting to ruffle some feathers even more so around the NFL. And in particular, with the players union, where it doesn't seem like everybody was kept apprised of the collusion case. And for those that don't know, it all really starts with the guaranteed contract that Jimmy Haslam and the Browns gave to Deshaun Watson and how that was greeted by owners around the league. So what's the latest development with all this, in particular, the CBA, players union?
And really, it comes from the league. It all started with the league because they were able to twice fend off efforts by the NFL Players Association to make fully guaranteed contracts for all players part of the collective bargaining agreement. So 2011, 2020, the NFL pushed back on that. When the Browns turn around and give Deshaun Watson 5-year fully guaranteed, the NFL's like, oh, wait a minute. Let's not give these guys piecemeal what we've been able to collectively prevent them from getting. That's basically what happened. The league in this collusion grievance that was hidden from everyone. The league was caught with their hand in the cookie jar, telling teams, urging teams to collude when it comes to the amount of guarantees. And the Watson deal sparked it. And then the teams held the rope, as did the next quarterback contracts, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, no fully guaranteed contracts for any of them. So where it stands now, the NFLPA has been shamed into filing an appeal of this ruling, which was hidden for 5 months. So there will be an appeal. I don't know that it goes forward. It's possible the NFLPA gives up its appeal because the NFL wants more than $12 million in reimbursement for attorney's fees, which I think is a very weak argument under the CBA, but that becomes cover for the NFLPA to just move on from this thing. And then meanwhile, what happened is once ESPN, after a few weeks of no one doing anything by way of advancing the story that Pablo and I lit the fuse on, after some ESPN reporting last week, it came out that Executive Director Lloyd Howell has an obvious conflict of interest. He's a paid part-time consultant with a private equity fund that has been approved to buy minority interest in NFL teams. I mean, it's as blatant as you can get. And now the NFLPA kind of circling the wagons around Howell, and some think they're just trying to kick the can to when training camp opens. And we all have bright, shiny objects every single day that distract us from this, and they can go forward with the Lloyd Howell. But we'll see. We'll see. There's a lot more to it. And Pablo's done a great job, and we've kind of both encouraged each other and challenged each other to advance the story. And it's hard to do when no one cares about it. And I thought it was funny over the weekend. When the NFLPA put out a very self-serving statement to support Lloyd Howell, all these reporters who had ignored the story from the get-go are quoting that statement. It's like, you guys don't even know what the hell's going on. And you're just putting that statement out there. You've been actively ignoring the story, but people are paying attention, and one thing I've realized is the fans really care about it. They just understand there's something wrong about everything that's going on, and even if it doesn't directly affect what we see on the football field, if the stuff behind the curtain isn't right, if there isn't a right balance there between league and players, it can create all sorts of weird outcomes, and it's just good to see that so many fans give a crap about something that so many reporters have been burying their head in the sands over.
Yeah, but Mike, if there is no recourse here, despite what the findings were, the management council, and even owners openly saying that there was basically collusion here. With all that going on, what's the recourse if the judge didn't really punish the NFL? And what's to stop the NFL from continuing to go about its business in this manner and colluding?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens if this appeal goes forward, because it goes to a 3-judge panel. And the way I read the CBA, I don't think the arbitrator's decision gets a whole lot of deference. And I don't want to get too deep into the legal weeds, but a lot of times when you take a case up on appeal, you're stuck with some of the decisions made by the judge who handled the case below. I don't think the 3-judge panel on appeal is going to be bound by anything. So if there's a 2-to-1 ruling that the arbitrator got it wrong when he ignored and basically dismissed strong circumstantial evidence of actual collusion, because the arbitrator found, because he had to find, the league urged the teams to collude. He found that there was no evidence of actual collusion because he had an explanation for every piece of circumstantial evidence that was damning to the NFL's position. If 2 of these 3 judges that at the next level say, nah, you know what, we don't expect them to admit it. And look, one of the things I learned in my law practice, I represented employees who were fired from their jobs. And you file a wrongful discharge case, and you're going to have a parade of witnesses saying, no, we didn't consider that factor we weren't supposed to consider. So you have to prove that they did through circumstantial evidence. I think that the NFLPA has the circumstantial evidence. So there could be still an adverse ruling for the NFL, a possibly crippling $1 billion damages award for the NFLPA. That's still possible. We'll see how zealous the NFLPA is. As I said earlier, they were shamed into filing the appeal. Will they zealously push this? Will they try to win it? That's why people are watching this. There's this weird sense that the NFL and the NFLPA, the NFLPA non-player leadership, that they're kind of in bed together, and these conflicts of interest, or the one very specific one Lloyd Howell has, is what's fueling this idea that something's going on here. And that's why I think fans care. Their spider sense is telling them, based upon the reporting that's been done that's really tackled this issue, something's going on. And And that's the biggest problem for both the union and the league. It just feels like something's going on.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He's on the Fan Hotline. Find him on Twitter. Find him on X. Find him on everything at Pro Football Talk. He's the author of two ebooks out right now.
Got a new one coming too.
Oh, you got a new one?
August 19th.
Well, what's the new one? What's the new one?
It's called Big Shield, and it is a fictional tale of how gambling, the mob, and professional football, but not the NFL, wink, wink, so I don't get sued for copyright infringement, can come together and create chaos. Because I've been very concerned about what legalized gambling can do as it relates to scandals in the NFL if the NFL isn't careful. And the main area I'm concerned about is how inside information can be misused by players. I don't think the NFL is nearly as concerned about what can happen. So this story is about a third-string quarterback who misuses inside information, funnels it to the mob, before games, and more importantly, during games, to give the mob an inside track on what they need to know to win their bets. And it just kind of goes from there.
And that's on Amazon as well, August 19th.
It'll be available on Amazon. You can pre-order it now. 99 cents for the ebook, which is so freaking stupid of me. I almost said the other word, and thankfully I didn't. But it's so freaking stupid of me to sell them for 99 cents. It's a great deal, and you can get the print version for $14.99. Comes out August 19th.
Glorious. Absolutely glorious. Mike, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, all over social media, all over that. Has that new book, Big Shield, August 19th, coming out on Amazon. Big thanks to him for the time. 216-474-0092. All right, the Quinshon Judkins thing gets even weirder because he's not signed. And then I was surprised that Quinshon Judkins' contract situation has something to do with other players after all this. I mean, if you were one of their agents, you'd be going nuts. Big thanks to Mike Florio for just joining us. Kind of went over the legalese of what could happen. I mean, it's somewhat comparable to the Mike Hall situation, but I think a lot of more things have to play out before we can compare it to the Mike Hall situation. This is about Quinshon Judkins and if he's put on paid leave by the NFL.
There is strategically a reason to get this done the moment you're put on paid leave. Because if you just let the legal system play out while you're on paid leave, you may miss the whole season. This thing could just linger and linger and linger. So that's how it could go for Judkins.
Kenny, he also said,
how do I pay a guy that's not under contract?
Right, right. And he also says prosecutors will use this to their advantage. Yeah. The fact that he wants to get this done as soon as possible.
Well, he should.
And I'm telling you, the one thing that sticks out to me, I'm not going to speak for you guys, the one thing that sticks out to me is the NFL has a rookie coming into the league that is being accused of punching a girl in the face. I mean, you know, last year it was had an incoming rookie accused of pulling a firearm up to it. Like, those are things that the NFL, it's like an automatic suspension. It's an automatic suspension because they don't want a league full of players or the perception that the league condones domestic violence. It's almost in some ways worse with people they know.
But why do they feel that way? This goes back to the Ray Rice situation. Where is there a video? Is there not a video? We don't know about a video. Then TMZ is able to get the video. And if it's like, if TMZ is able to get the video, you had access to videos. And so when that happens, it's changed everything.
And the NFL, you're exactly right. And the NFL is like the most Teflon league, right? But the one thing they don't want, they don't ever want the perception that they have a bunch of bad dudes. If it ever, like, they're okay with some bad dudes, right? I mean, every league to some extent,
has,
and businesses in general,
has bad dudes.
Has some bad dudes. But they don't want to flip it on its head. They don't want, you know, big-time players across the board. This is a second-round pick.
Yeah.
This is somebody who started Ohio State on a national championship team. All of that is taken into consideration. It's not about fairness. It's not about, hey, we need to legislate or litigate, you know, every single one equally. That is not how the league works. It just doesn't work like that. It's going to, unfortunately, when there's a New York Post headline like there was yesterday, when I saw that, I'm like, this is even worse now. It's even worse because you and I both saw yesterday, basically all of Brown's Twitter was calling the accuser a liar.
Well, it was
without any facts.
It was yesterday morning. And then when Tom Pelissero put out the report, it basically flipped on its head to unserious franchise, can't root for this team. And it was weird because I'm hearing, well, you guys can't blame Andrew Berry. And it's like, Well, no, you can't blame Andrew Berry, but in the end, it still falls on him. He's still the guy who drafted him, and the guy's not available. So who else is it supposed to fall on? It falls on him, and it falls on the organization. Whether that's fair or not, that's not the question. It's just how people feel. Because there was a lot of the same people sending us messages yesterday during the show, Ken, you're wrong. And I go, no, this is how you're going to feel. Who then were giving how I knew they were going to feel once the report came out. And good God, if a video ever gets out, like he's, oh God. 216-474-0092. I mean, it's bad enough as it is for crying out loud, but I mean, if you get to that, Lord Almighty. So there's a lot of things he's got to get figured out right now. And yeah, the prosecution will use that to their advantage. As Florio's dead right about that. I mean, it's part of the art of arguing in court. It's part of the game of it. And they know that he needs to get to an NFL camp. He has a place that he has a chance to make a lot of money, and he has messed up significantly here, allegedly. And unless he's able to prove his innocence beyond a shadow of a doubt, and he's willing to fight for it, and if he's willing to fight for it, fine. I mean, maybe his good name is above that. His mother is a lawyer, correct? If I'm not mistaken, I've read that. Now, I have to read this because I thought she had called the alleged victim had called the mother of him. So there's a lot here, man. There's a lot here.
And it just sucks.
This is really bad stuff.
It just sucks that.
Really tough.
It obviously, look, this is never.
At one point, she exited the vehicle and called the defendant's mother. Go ahead.
Yeah, these allegations are never good whenever, but especially right now. I mean, it's right before camp. Not a ton going. Baseball's in the All-Star break. NBA free agency's done. It's like nothing going on. So this becomes a national story. And that's why it's going to create headlines. And so, you know, we will certainly see how it plays out. I don't know. I don't know if your opinion changed at all, Ken. And we're just speculating on this stuff.
What do you mean?
How the NFL, you know, is going to approach it. But, I mean, my mind immediately went to six games. I don't know what your mind did.
Oh, it was five games for my call, right? Yeah. So that's where it started for me.
Right, five games, yeah.
But then when this comes out, this looks really bad. They say they have photos here. So if the photos come out, it's as Mike said, it's a PR thing for the NFL. Right, wrong, whatever. I mean, so already you're looking at, you've put yourself in a bad situation.
And not only that, now Kevin Stefanski's got to be asked about it.
Yeah.
And others. You know, Dylan Sampson might be asked in a way about it, because now he has a chance to, and you hate to break it down football wise, but that's what we have to do eventually, is that now Dylan Sampson has an opportunity because this happens, but they're all going to be asked about it. Next time Jimmy Haslam talks, you know, could he be asked about it?
2025 NFL head coaching rankings came out from CBS. You are going to be a little bit surprised here. Do you know where Kevin Stefanski ranks?
No.
He ranks 13th.
Whoa, okay.
In the coaching list. Now, this comes off the heels of Pro Football Talk a couple of weeks ago, where they had Kevin Stefanski at number 10 overall.
Of returning coaches.
Of returning coaches, yes. Kevin Stefanski's ranked 13th. You know who he's ahead of? He is ahead of Dan Quinn of the Washington Commanders. Mm. He is ahead of D'Amico Ryans. A person who did they not make the playoffs again last year? Houston
yes.
did, and also
and holds a playoff win over
beat the brakes off us in the playoffs 2 years ago. He is ahead of Mike Vrabel. He is ahead of Pete Carroll. He's ahead of Zach Taylor. That's where I kind of draw the line there. It's like, yeah, you're ahead of Zach Taylor regardless. You know what I think of Zach Taylor. He is 13th. He's behind Sean McDermott, who at one point, I mean, a lot of people had at the outhouse. He is two spots behind Sean Payton, and then the rest of the normal suspects. Is Kevin Stefanski? I know you hate when I do this. You and Keith, I know you guys are going to text. I just kind of want to know. You guys, when you look around the league, when you guys look around the country, do you think Kevin Stefanski's overrated or underrated? Do you guys think that he's an underrated coach, that he's actually better than what Browns fans make him out to be? Or do you believe that he's just overrated because of the Browns' history and because he's the only guy that get them to the playoffs and win over the last umpteen years?
I mean, every time this comes up outside of Cleveland with people that cover the league, people that work in the league, like they all think Kevin Stefanski is a really good coach.
He is right below tier one, the cream of the crop. There's 12 coaches in the cream of the crop. He is right below that. The quote here from CBS, it's almost unbelievable. Stefanski's just 4 games under .500 for his career. Given the regular dearth of roster stability in Cleveland, does he have a hand in the Browns quarterback misfires? It's hard to argue otherwise. Still, his squeezing a couple of playoff bids out of decimated lineups, including one fronted by the likes of Joe Flacco and Kareem Hunt, affirms his helpful touch. He is a complicated figure as far as head coaches are concerned. If you are a person who doesn't believe in anything that he does, I mean, you couldn't be angrier. If you're a person who really believes in Kevin Stefanski, I mean, you're looking at this in a completely different light. Because you would say, well, he had a hand in the quarterback thing, or if he didn't have a hand in the quarterback thing, maybe he should have just helped Baker Mayfield instead of being a part of what this mess has become over the last few years. Okay, it's absolutely fair. 40-44, and they say he's got the dearth of roster stability, even though he's a thought partner, quote-unquote, of Andrew Berry. So would he or would he not have a hand in that? But I'll tell you this on the other side, and this is where I'm a big-time defender of Kevin Stefanski. You cannot tell me that there's any way that he let these guys go that were on his staff last year. Part of being a head coach is part of picking a good staff and having good assistants underneath you. Like, that's, for Dan Campbell, that's the biggest challenge. Replacing Ben Johnson and replacing Aaron Glenn. Replacing those two guys with, how does your defense work? Because the first year with Aaron Glenn, people wanted him fired, and by the end, he was the cat's ass. And with Ben Johnson, who are you going to pick to replace that guy to be able to work with Jared Goff? It could end up being a total disaster. We'll see how it goes. Because I'll tell you what, with what they replaced with the offensive coordinator last year, we saw dead on what a total disaster was. And with some of the decisions they made in their coaching staff. The offensive line coaching, how they basically secretly had to switch out who was in charge halfway through the year.
That one was...
I mean,
we have had a bit of a roller coaster here with the play calling, the OC stuff, and not a ton of real success. I mean, for the Browns, it's success to get to the playoffs at all. But around the league, you know, plenty of bad teams have made the playoffs. And we don't put those coaches on pedestals. But me and you, we feels like we're always defending Kevin Stefanski to our callers.
Well, because I do try to see it with some level of common sense in what he deals with and some of the things that he absolutely has blamed on him. And that he's a head coach in the league and that some of the stuff just ain't going to be fair. The same thing we just said, where it's not fair. When it comes to Quinshon Judkins, there was nothing in his past that said he was going to do anything like this. There were no warning signs of what we saw. Is it fair to blame Andrew Berry? Absolutely not, it is. It is not fair to blame Andrew Berry. But guess what people are going to do? Blame Andrew Berry, because you're the general manager and the buck has to stop somewhere. And he's the head coach. The buck has to stop somewhere. So does the outside media overrate Kevin Stefanski, or do Browns fans underrate him? I can see why people get in on this Shador business. Oh, my God. You want to talk about the summer content machine? Here we are.
What's the problem?
So someone sent me a video of him working out yesterday at an area high school. And the reaction to it is extremely polarizing. Some people, you have a reaction to everything. I don't think I have enough time to name all the different routes that people are taking to this. One, that I'm a Shador fanboy. Two, that I'm disrespecting Shador because the throw that he has is maybe a little bit cattywampus. I didn't see what the guy did on the route. Maybe the guy on the route ran to the wrong place. Who's to know?
But your post was not about the mechanics of the quarterback.
It was just that he was working out.
It was that he was rising and what?
But
grinding.
He's rising and grinding. Right? Days before camp actually starts, he in his final days off, he's working. That was the entire, but you take anything else of what it is.
He could be in Cabo.
I have people accusing.
We've had quarterbacks go to Mexico this entire time.
I definitely want my quarterback to both rise and the ground.
I have people accusing.
Simultaneously.
Shador Sanders of paying me to put this out there. That is, I can tell you 100% without a shadow of a doubt, I have not been paid. Some people are accusing me of doing the bidding of Shador's people. I've never spoken to Shador Sanders because I didn't get to interview him the day he got drafted. He wasn't able to do the media availability. So I've never spoken to Shador Sanders, and I don't know any of his people who are in charge of any of his stuff. She can't come after me.
So you just put it out.
Listen, I'm a football guy. He was on a football field where a lot of football guys congregate. One of the football guys had a video of him, a football guy, doing a football practice. That person sent it to me. I asked whether or not I could share it. They said, hold on, let me check with one of my other football guys. Two football guys got back to me. A football guy said, yes, go ahead and share it. I checked with one more person just to make sure.
Was that a football guy?
And that person was a, well, he's a sort of football guy. But he's a
like
head
flag football guy?
He's a head honcho of a media outlet. I checked with him. He gave it the green light, so I shared it. I shared it. That's what I did. He's putting in his work. Other than that, all these fights you guys are having, that's with you guys. I'm just sharing on a tough couple of days, a Browns rookie where they didn't have any cameras there. This is a cell phone. His media people didn't call me. Putting in his work. Just putting in his work.
And it's also,
apparently I'm the bad boy.
Don't get mad at him for putting in his work.
And it's also that I think it bodes better for him when it's shared by someone like you as opposed to somebody from his
camp.
Yeah. His production people. Team.
Yep. Here you go. Just getting his work in. You're allowed to as a rookie. All right. Is Kevin Stefanski, oh, he's dying over there. Kevin Stefanski's ranked 13th by CBS. Is he overrated by the media or underrated by Browns fans? Nick and Maslin, you're next up on the Fan.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Speaking of high school stadiums, we're doing pretty well there, Nick. Go ahead.
You know, Kenneth, I'm a little disappointed in you in this aspect.
Oh, wow.
I played. I've coached. You coach. There's two things that separate good coaches from head coaches. One, good head coaches know how to motivate. Their players hit the field. They play with their fire on, their hair on fire. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that from a Stefanski team? Very rarely, if any. Number two, and the most important thing, and you know this, Ken, head coaches, good head coaches, discipline. Jadeveon Clowney walked all over him, and it's a proven case that the players have walked all over Stefanski and he's never put his foot down.
Those are fair points.
That's a problem. Yes, Stefanski is a good coach. I'll give him that. But a head coach, no. No, the two most important things you need is a head coach, and he failed miserably. I'm sorry.
Nick, thank you for the call.
I didn't understand the first part.
What?
He said they don't play with their
hair on fire.
What would that look like?
Actually, I wish Nick was still on the phone because Jim Schwartz has been head coach before, too.
I would say that 2 years ago, you would say the defense was playing with its hair on fire.
Yeah.
And you had to douse them down.
Yes, and there were games when Amari Cooper was catching 230 yards worth of passes.
I just think
his hair was on fire.
There are two things that are that one kind of bothers me because that seems like more of a phrase that people throw out.
Nick Chubb ran the football with his hair on fire. Wyatt Teller blocks with his hair on fire.
Oh, yeah, it's true. His hair was on fire.
No real meat. The other one is,
and your pants aren't on fire telling us that his hair is on fire. Yeah,
well, the other one that really bothers me all the time. And man,
I thought that was a good point, what he said about the second one. I'm sorry, Tone, I didn't mean it, but now I wish I would have left Nick on the phone because I thought of the Jim Schwartz thing after I let him go. Go ahead, sorry.
The other thing bothers me all the time, and I hear it, it's got to be a few times a week here. The Browns have got to stop trying to be the smartest guys in the room.
Like, I actually agree with that now.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that whenever we take a player that's not great, you jump to, well, they were trying to be the smartest guy in the room when they took that player. It's like, well, every team has busts.
I don't want them to be the biggest idiots.
I would certainly rather not have them be the biggest idiots.
Football.
Like, when you say that, fine, say that, well, but just back it up with something.
Just be a smart guy in the room. You don't have to try to be the smartest.
Okay, we took at number 5 overall, Mason Graham. He was in that range, right?
Yes.
Was he not in that range?
Yeah.
And I saw, I don't know if you guys agree, but almost universally, I saw people give the Browns credit for that trade. Not because they think Travis Hunter's a bust, but because there are certain trades you just have to make for compensation purposes.
What happens if by week 12, Travis Hunter has become
clear
cut?
Yes, but they're going to be accused of being the smartest guys in a room when everybody liked their trade. And Mason Graham was in the realm of a guy you would take at number 5 overall.
They weren't
trying to be the smartest team in the room.
Point, counterpoint.
They were trying to make a trade. And by the way, if they get the great quarterback next year because they traded up, Are you going to applaud them for trying to be the smartest team in the room?
Can we argue about this tomorrow?
Sure.
I just don't want to do it on the pod. I want to do it with the listeners.
I just think people say it because it's a phrase they've heard and it makes them feel good. And so whenever a team does something wrong, they were trying to be the smartest guys in a room.
Can I go over the rest of the list as well on the pod?
Yeah.
All right. Save that for tomorrow because I already have a point counterpoint to you. Hopefully I'll remember it.